Good afternoon, and welcome to another episode of In the Garden, coming to you live right here on KFSK. On this show, we dig our hands in the dirt, get back to nature, and find that special place of abundance and beauty. You're welcome to call in with questions and comments. Our number is 907-772-3808. We're here to help you. Spring is in full swing, and not a moment too soon. We slogged through one heck of a winter, and it's finally in the rearview mirror. Robins are singing, sandhill cranes are squawking overhead, and I've even seen a hummingbird whizzing around. Green leaves are popping up everywhere, and skunk cabbages are blooming in the ditches and on the creek banks. It's one of my favorite times of year as I get back to making daily rounds of my plant babies and watching buds break and leaves unfurl one by one. As the old Chinese proverb goes, if you want to be happy, be a gardener. Everything's getting a bit of a late start as the plant life adjusts their biological clocks to this year's unusually cold and snowy March. Plants pay a big price in lost energy and resources if they lose an early flush of leaves to a late frost, so they're understandably cautious. But the beautiful sunny weather we've been enjoying is helping to get the message across that the growing season is getting underway, and the plant that's too cautious about leafing out might get left behind in the deep, dark shade of its faster-growing neighbors. So, are we past the last frost yet? Great question. I haven't seen frost for a week at least in my backyard near the ferry terminal, but there's always variations with terrain and microclimate. Looking at the local forecast, I'm seeing lows in the 40s for the next week, which looks very promising, and more sunshine on the way next week. Hallelujah! Areas further inland, like Papke's Landing, and especially cold air drainages, like the location of the old fir farm around 7 Mile, tend to see later frost than areas closer to a large body of water or on a south-facing slope or a west-facing slope. On still, cold nights, the chilly air sinks downward and flows out along the valleys just like water. Even on a single small property, there can be a big difference in the persistence of frost from one area to another. Buildings and large trees tend to have a moderating effect that provides a few degrees of protection from frost, while areas bare of vegetation and out in the open like a parking area usually see more frost, especially when they are shaded from the sun. West and southwest exposures tend to be the warmest, as you might have observed driving out the road this spring. The folks living out around 4 and 5 Mile on that west-facing slope above the highway saw their snow disappearing weeks before some other places, and as a result, the grass and other vegetation there has a real good head start. If you're interested in growing any fruit trees like apples, plums, or cherries, I recommend taking a look around your home and property for large open areas of south or west-facing wall or retaining wall that could provide a sunny, sheltered microclimate. You'll often notice grass and weeds growing much earlier in these areas than on the shady side of a building, along with the snow melting faster, of course. Keep looking and you'll find all kinds of unique planting opportunities. I'm sure some of the fishermen's warehouses and gear sheds around town have a bare, sunny wall somewhere that would be perfect for some espaliered fruit trees. Those rock embankments around the new Hammer and Wecon expansion, that big parking area or whatever they're going to do with it, to the south of the Hammer and Wecon grocery store. Up there on top of the hill, there's those big kind of crushed rock retaining walls, embankments, and boy, those would be a perfect little pseudo-Mediterranean microclimate for some fruit trees or other heat-loving plants with all that rock facing out in the sun. I'll bet those get real nice and warm on sunny spring days like the ones we've been having lately. Call in if you've got questions, comments, or just want to shoot the breeze about what's happening in your garden this spring. fertilizing. This is a good time to think about applying various kinds of fertilizer to give your plants what they need as they begin to unfurl new growth and draw on the nutrients available in the soil to build leaves, flowers, and shoots. Fertilization is always a careful balancing act. Too little is better than too much in most cases, as an excess of nitrogen in particular can increase susceptibility to diseases and also cause off flavors in fruits and other edibles. So especially when you're dealing with soluble nitrogen in something like fish emulsion or Miracle-Gro type fertilizer, soluble nitrogen is really powerful stuff because it hits the plant pretty much instantaneously, assuming that the soil is moist. And it has a very strong effect, but, you know, plants need nitrogen, but too much. And you'll notice not long, you know, within maybe a week or so during the growing season of an excess of nitrogen fertilization, you'll notice the kind of what they call nitrogen burn, where the edges of the leaves get this kind of crispy brown look, like it was singed. Or right on the tip of a leaf, will get that singed brown look. And that's a good hint that the plant's getting more nitrogen than it needs, and you should pull back. And that excess nitrogen, while it can fuel faster, more vigorous growth for a while, you'll see this kind of weak, sappy growth, and then later on, potentially a dieback from disease or being vulnerable to insects, because the plant is making lots of growth, but it doesn't have the other micronutrients that it needs to make all of its secondary defensive compounds that deter the pests and diseases and things. The plants are constantly making a huge variety of different molecules that serve all kinds of different functions to deter fungi and bacterial pathogens and deter insects from grazing on them. And they need a wide spectrum of different minerals, trace minerals, to make all of those things. And that's our job as gardeners, to help them get what they need. And so seaweed, of course, is a classic fertilizer around here, and it's a really good one. It's pretty gentle. The nitrogen levels are quite moderate. It has lots of trace minerals. Pretty much everything from the ocean has all kinds of trace minerals, because all the minerals in the world end up in the ocean. And they all get spread out, and they end up being pretty balanced. That's also why seafood is so good for you. Because there's this wonderful spectrum of, you know, not only the macronutrients, as it were, the proteins, which are built up with nitrogen, but also all those trace minerals like magnesium and manganese and copper and iodine and zinc and all those other things that are important in their various ways to plant life as well as animal life. Seaweed takes a while to decompose, and so from what I've seen and heard from folks, that's kind of a better one for the fall, when you can mulch things and then let it kind of rot and decompose over the winter. And with all the winter rains, I think applying seaweed in the spring, you probably wouldn't see much effect immediately, unless maybe we had a super rainy spring like last year and it all rotted more quickly. But in the dry weather, it tends to kind of dry up. Hence, resorting to the soluble nitrogen sources. Fish emulsion is a good one. You know, you can get it in the bottle down at Hammer and Wecon. You can make your own fish emulsion if you feel adventurous and you have some barrels and some fish. There's certainly a lot of fish around town. Fish waste is quite easy to find. And fish emulsion can be pretty powerful stuff. All that nitrogen from the fish, plus all the trace minerals from those sea-going creatures. But But as I was saying, it needs to be really spoon-fed to the plants. So plants can only use so much nitrogen at a time, and anything in excess of that is going to burn them and cause issues. So you can find dosage details on the back of the fish emulsion bottle or whatever kind of fertilizer you're buying. You know, they will have specific recommendations on the back of the packaging to tell you, you know, how much per square foot. And as you get to know your different crops and what you're growing, you'll get a better sense of what things' needs are, you know, for, you know, on one end of the spectrum, for kind of our native or near native shrubs and trees and perennials, the things that are already fairly well adapted to the kinds of soils we have, which tend to be high in organic matter, fairly acidic, maybe really acidic. Plants that are adapted to dealing with those conditions, like, you know, iron tends to be quite plentifully available in our kinds of soils, but not calcium, for example. So most of our native plants are adapted to that, and they don't really need much in the way of fertility. They might appreciate some, but even just, you know, mulching with alder duff, for example, that's a great, real kind of gentle, low-key, natural source of nitrogen and compost. Alder leaves, or even the kind of mucky, leafy stuff from underneath a big patch of salmon berries. There's a lot of those around, and you can often find some nice black soil under those salmon berry bushes if you're willing to get in there and whack back those prickly stems. But going back to our plant selection, you know, the more heavy feeders tend to be the really highly bred and cultivated plants, like a lot of our garden plants, you know, tomatoes, of course, and a lot of the brassicas, cabbages, Brussels sprouts, kale, things like that, that, you know, really appreciate a good, rich garden soil. Potatoes, from what I've read and experienced, are not so hungry on the nitrogen end. They don't like too much nitrogen compared to most other garden crops. They kind of like a slightly lower nitrogen soil, and they don't mind some acidity. So hence they do really well here. They're already fairly well adapted to our soils. A lot of flowers I know really like phosphorus. Phosphorus is an important one for blooms. And so the main fertilizer components that you'll see listed on almost any commercially available fertilizer are the NPK, the nitrogen, phosphorus, and potassium, represented by the K. And those are the big three. But again, those plants, all plants really need a full spectrum of trace minerals. And the other thing that folks tend to overlook beyond NPK is the pH. And that's the difference between acidity and alkalinity. So whether the soil is sour or sweet, as some like to say. And around here, pretty much all of our native soils are sour to varying degrees. So we have the pH scale of 0 to 8, I believe. Or maybe 8 is the highest alkalinity that we usually hear of. But at any rate, 7 is neutral. And so everything below 7 is acidic. And most of our soils around here, from what I've seen looking at soil tests, are in the 4s and 5s, and occasionally in the 3s, like in an actual muskeg. And that's really acidic. And I think the pH scale is, you know, it's like the seismographic scale, where it steps up exponentially with each numerical increment. So, you know, a 5 is 10 times more acidic than a 6, and so on. So, you know, ideally for garden soils, either neutral or just slightly acidic, like a 6.5 is just a little bit acidic. And that's really the ideal for garden soils. And because of our high rainfall, rain just inherently is very slightly acidic. And so high rainfall tends to kind of continually want to make the soil acidic. And then also a lot of our native plants, you know, all of our conifer trees, the needles and leaves that fall contain organic acids that push that soil pH down as well, and create this more acidic environment in the soil, which those plants are adapted to, and it favors them, but not necessarily what you're trying to grow in your garden. And some plants like rhododendrons are right in there with our native species. They love that acidic, high organic matter soil. That's right where they want to be. But other things don't, especially plants from drier climates. A lot of our herbs, and, you know, some folks around here grow grapes in a greenhouse. Haven't seen anyone trying to grow grapes outdoors, but, you know, grapes definitely like more alkaline soil. You know, think of Mediterranean areas, and those low rainfall areas often have more alkaline soil because they don't have all the rain to leach out the salts and minerals and bring down the pH. So pH is an important one to think about. Generally, applying lime, which is just calcium carbonate, basically chalk, ancient seashells, lime or any other ready source of pulverized calcium can help to bring up the pH and sweeten that soil. And that's another thing that the rains will wash it into the soil and eventually wash it out. So if you apply lime this time of year during these kind of spring dry spells that we're having, I would recommend spraying down, watering heavily, to kind of wash that lime down into the soil where it can start to do some good, and affect the pH down in your soil. Otherwise, it's just going to sit there on the surface until we do get some heavy rains. But yeah, liming is kind of a continual need in our soils around here. Even if you've done it in the past, it may be needed again because again, the rain tends to wash things out. And there are some great local sources I know down the Narrows, where they dredged out the Narrows 20 years ago. There's a place where the dredgings were dumped out, and it's like this shell sand that's, you know, pretty much calcium in all these little crushed shells that came out of the bottom of the channel. And that stuff is great for gardens. If you can find that somewhere, or you know, crushed eggshells, I guess you could run eggshells through a coffee grinder probably and make your own garden lime pretty well. So yeah, and of course there's, you know, good old-fashioned homemade compost can be a really great amendment as well. Mulching your plants with compost, whether store-bought in a bag or made by you, is a good kind of gentle way to fertilize things, as that compost kind of slowly integrates with the soil below it. It's a much slower and gentler way to fertilize than applying soluble nitrogen in the form of fish emulsion or other liquid fertilizers. And so, as I said before, you know, with fertilizers, less is more. Just be cautious and keep a close eye on your plants. The other thing about fertilization is that, so when you get plants from a nursery, you know, conventionally grown container stock of especially ornamental varieties, flowering things like, you know, your hydrangeas or roses or run-of-the-mill ornamentals like that, generally speaking, in their nursery environment, they've been pretty heavily fertilized. And in order to really maximize their growth rate and help the nursery keep their business going. But the important thing to remember with that is that those really fertilized plants tend to be a bit less hardy when the winter comes around. And so if you're really pushing the envelope with trying to grow something that's only borderline hardy here, and you really want it to survive, or maybe you tried growing it before and it died, but you really want to take another shot at it. If you're really trying to increase the hardiness of your plants, consider kind of starving them on fertility. Don't fertilize them. Don't water them too much. Grow them in a really lean soil, like kind of like sand or something without a whole lot of nutrients, depending on what plant it is. And they'll make much slower growth, but be much more plant, more cold hardy, because there's this kind of trade-off between lush, fast growth rate and hardiness when the cold comes around. And there's a really fascinating dude in Sweden named Peter Korn. They call him the Sandman because he grows everything in pure sand in his garden, and he's completely dedicated to rare desert and alpine plants that he grows in this cold, wet, temperate northern latitude climate of southern Sweden, kind of southwestern Sweden. And he's got yuccas and cactus and all kinds of things that you would never imagine someone growing in Sweden, but they're just in these sand beds. You know, they have basically zero organic matter, and all the rainfall just drains away immediately because they're growing in very sharp sand. Yeah, look him up. He's got some really interesting stuff going on. I think one of his gardens was in a pretty high rainfall area of Sweden, like 60 inches or more, and temps pretty similar to here. So, and acidic native soils. So yeah, kind of interesting, comparison there. But anyways, a lot of options for fertilizing, getting your plants off to a good start, depending on what you're growing and what its needs are. It probably would benefit from a little bit of help from you. And yeah, deer protection, another thing to think about. Our deer have had a hard winter, and I've seen them, you know, standing around huddled in little groups, looking for something, waiting for one green shoot to emerge from a twig somewhere. So they're hungry, the ones that survived anyways, and they probably got their eyes on your garden. They're probably watching all your rose bushes and everything starting to leaf out. So consider some fencing, or deer repellent. Fencing is my favorite, but some folks get good results with the repellent, especially when the weather's drier like this. So yeah, keep that in mind. And whatever you've got to be planting, it's a good time for planting a lot of things, trees, shrubs, perennials, great time to get those in the ground while things are still just starting to start growing. It's going to be more stressful for them to be transplanted later on in the season when they've got all kinds of green leaves hanging out there. And yeah, now is the time to get started. So enjoy your garden. And that's all for today, folks. Thanks for joining me on another episode of In the Garden right here on KFSK. And until next week, happy spring.